The White House says it won't cooperate with the House impeachment probe.
To issue a blanket throwdown really ratcheted up the tensions with the House Democrats and leaves very little room to maneuver from here.
And a court finds the FBI's use of a surveillance database violated the privacy rights of Americans.
This is a really rare and almost unprecedented look inside of the workings of this court.
Plus, we'll have the latest on what was discussed at last month's Fed meeting. This is What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at a secretive surveillance court ruling, here's what you missed. The White House said it won't cooperate with the impeachment inquiry in the House. The move comes after the administration blocked the deposition of Gordon Sondland yesterday. He's the U.S. ambassador who's seen as central to the Ukraine controversy. From Washington, Javon Hughes has more.
The White House gave a couple of different reasons. They said that the House had broken with past practice and protocol by never officially holding a vote to authorize an impeachment inquiry. So the whole process essentially was illegitimate. The White House said that the president had been deprived of due process and basic fairness because he didn't have an attorney who was going to be present at every single hearing or event that was going to be part of the impeachment proceedings, and that really the Democrats were embarking on a huge effort to overturn the will of the people as expressed in the 2016 elections, that their efforts were illegitimate and that the White House was not going to be party to it.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi responded, saying that Democrats, quote, see a growing body of evidence that shows that President Trump abused his office. Siobhan says the White House's decision suggests little room for cooperation.
I see very little sign that there is any room for future cooperation. There's a line at the very end in which the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, says that we hope you will abandon the current invalid efforts to pursue an impeachment inquiry and join the president in focusing on the many important goals that matter to the American people. So he's basically saying, move on.
Separately, we've got a new poll out with NBC News in which we asked Americans how they felt about the impeachment inquiry. The poll was conducted on Friday and through the weekend. Here's Aaron Zitner with the results.
55% of the public wants Congress to do something. That includes about a third of the public that says it's appropriate for Congress to hold an impeachment inquiry, but then an additional quarter who say there's enough evidence right now to impeach. So between those who say, let's impeach now, there's enough known, and those who say the Congress should look into this further with an eye toward potential impeachment, you get 55% of the public. By contrast, 39% in our survey said there's not enough evidence for Congress to hold an impeachment inquiry and that lawmakers should let Donald Trump finish his term.
Another interesting finding is that during the Mueller investigation, around 50% of respondents said an impeachment inquiry was unwarranted. Our key takeaway? The results show that Americans want to learn more about President Trump's actions, but they disagreed over how the public viewed the matter so far. And Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $8 billion, yes, billion, in damages to a Maryland man. A Philadelphia jury found the man's use of the antipsychotic drug Risperdal when he was a child caused enlarged breasts. The jury found that Johnson & Johnson didn't properly warn about the risks of developing the condition while on the drug. It's the biggest award so far of the more than 13,000 lawsuits against Johnson & Johnson focused on the drug. Johnson & Johnson said the verdict was excessive and unfounded, and that the amount awarded to the man was, quote, grossly disproportionate. Now, our main story this morning. It has to do with this secretive surveillance court. The court ruled that the FBI's electronic surveillance activities violated the constitutional privacy rights of Americans. It's a rare rebuke to the U.S. spying programs. J.R. Whalen has been finding out more from Byron Tao.
So, Byron, what did the court say about the FBI's use of this database?
The court essentially said that the way the FBI was querying this database, which is supposed to be used for foreign intelligence, violated the constitutional rights of Americans whose names or emails or telephone numbers were searched in this database, as well as violating the law that Congress established when establishing this program called FISA 702, again, which is supposed to be targeted at foreign targets.
Now, this is kind of rare. U.S. spying activities, they rarely face legal challenges, right?
By necessity, spying programs have to happen in the dark. Generally speaking, the court in question here is not your typical federal court. It's actually a secret court that deals just with foreign intelligence surveillance matters, and very few of its opinions have ever been released publicly. So this is a really rare and almost unprecedented look inside of the workings of this court, first of all. And second of all, you're right that it's unusual in the post-9/11 era for courts to review these programs and find them unconstitutional or operating unlawfully, as in this case.
The court also said that individuals improperly used the database as well.
The court outlined in its opinion a couple of instances of individual FBI employees putting improper searches into the database, including one contract linguist who apparently searched for himself in this database, as well as his relatives. And so it does raise questions about what kind of procedural safeguards are on this database and how much oversight goes into monitoring how this information is used by the FBI.
So the use of this database under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court was intended to search for threats from foreign entities. But the fact that Americans' data was swept up in this is very likely to stir up reaction from people like civil libertarians, right?
That's right. The purpose of this law is to surveil foreigners. So the collection under this law is directed at people outside of the United States. But of course, sometimes Americans make phone calls or text messages or send emails to people who are located abroad. And so that means sometimes the communications of Americans get swept up in this as well. And the controversy here is, once the government collects it, can it search the data that it already has, even if it can't target an American, can it search that data for information about Americans? And what the court found this time was that the FBI was improperly doing so. It's only supposed to do that under very limited circumstances, and the searches that it was conducting were beyond the scope of the law.
So the court rules that Americans' privacy rights were violated. What happens now? Does this database shut down, or will everything just continue on in the hope that everyone just plays by the rules?
So the court is supposed to periodically review surveillance programs and sort of sign off on them. So what happened in this case was the FBI went to the court for its routine review of its surveillance programs, and also in the process disclosed some of this, some of these incidents that were happening at the FBI. At the FBI. And so the court made the FBI make some changes before it signed off on surveillance programs. So as of right now, the program appears to be operating with the blessing of the court, and the FBI says it's either fixing or has fixed these issues moving forward.
You can find our full report on the case up on WSJ.com. On to markets. We'll get the minutes of the Fed's September meeting later today. Investors will be paying close attention for any hints about future rate cuts. Columnist Mike Bird has more.
So the Federal Reserve is in an interesting position at the moment. At the last meeting that they had in September, they cut interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point, but there was more dissent from the committee that decides on interest rates than usual. And the economic data has been very mixed in the past couple of months, giving people different perceptions of how the US economy is performing. So I think what they're looking at, particularly from the minutes, is some sort of lean as to how the members are understanding what's happening in the US economy and where their biases lie towards more interest rate cuts or fewer interest rate cuts. This is all complicated slightly by the ructions in the repo market last month, which caused Fed Chair Jerome Powell to come out yesterday and say that the central bank would be providing more liquidity in the form of short-term asset swaps, which he was stressing is not the same as quantitative easing, but it's got a lot of people on edge, people paying a lot of attention to what the Fed is doing at the moment.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. The OECD released a new proposal for how countries should tax multinational corporations. It's meant to catch tax laws up to the growing digitization of the global economy. Let's go back in time. Decades ago, when companies sold their products abroad, their profits came mostly from manufactured goods. Today, digital services don't require a physical presence, and that's allowed a lot of companies, primarily in the tech sector, to lower their tax bills by basing their patents and licenses in lower tax countries. The new rules proposed by the OECD would give more taxing power to countries where the consumers are based. The OECD is hoping the proposal, which targets not just tech firms, but also luxury goods and cars, will be supported by finance ministers at the next G20 meeting. That's happening later this month in Washington. Finally, California's Governor Gavin Newsom signed a new law yesterday. It will cap rent increases in California. The law will limit annual rent increases to 5% plus the rate of inflation. More than half of California renters are considered burdened. That means they pay more than 30% of their income for housing, including utilities. We report the passage of the law could add momentum to a national rent control movement. Oregon and New York passed caps earlier this year, and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced federal legislation last month. That's what's news from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.